Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Downward Spiral. As always, my name's Tanner, and today we're jumping into episode 205 in the JFK assassination series, where we're going to be looking at the life of John F. Kennedy, leading up to November 22 of 1963. John Fitzgerald Kennedy was born May 29 of 1917 in Brookline, Massachusetts. He was the second of nine children, and he was born into a family that demanded intense physical and intellectual competition among the siblings. His father, Joseph Patrick Kennedy, had acquired a multi-million dollar fortune in banking, bootlegging, shipbuilding, and the film industry, and as a skilled player in the stock market, while his mother, Rose, was the daughter of John F. Fitzgerald, one time the mayor of Boston. They established trust funds for their children that guaranteed lifelong financial independence. Now, Joseph and Rose raised their kids in the Roman Catholic Church, as well as bringing them up with the ideals of the Democratic Party, which John F. Kennedy would later go on to serve into, as well as his brother Robert Kennedy. Later, in the fall of 1941, John F. Kennedy joined the U.S. Navy and 2 years later was sent to the South Pacific Ocean. By the time he was discharged in 1945, his older brother Joe, who their father had expected would be the first Kennedy to run for office, had been killed in the war, and the family's political standard passed to John, who had planned to pursue an academic or journalistic career. However, while he was serving in World War II, John F. Kennedy was in command of a PT cruiser boat that was ultimately sank by a Japanese destroyer in the Solomon Islands, and he was marooned far behind enemy lines, but ultimately led his men to safety and was awarded the U.S. Navy Medal for Heroism. He returned to active command at his own request, but the injury which he had suffered at his back never really healed, and despite surgical operations in 1944, 1954, and 1955, he was in much pain for the rest of his life. He also suffered from Addison disease, though this affliction was publicly concealed, and his brother would later go on to say at least one half of the days he spent on this earth were days of intense physical pain. Ultimately, though, these back problems never curbed John F. Kennedy from undertaking a strenuous life in politics. His family expected him to run for public office, and he did. And he won. Throughout John F. Kennedy's political career, he actually never lost an election. His first opportunity came in 1956 when he ran for Congress. Although still physically weak from his war injuries, he campaigned aggressively, bypassing the Democratic organization in the Massachusetts 11th Congressional District, depending instead upon his family, college friends, and fellow Navy officers. When the Democratic primary results had rolled in, he received nearly double of the vote of his nearest opponent, and later in the November election, he overwhelmed the Republican candidate. He was only 29. Kennedy served three terms in the House of Representatives, serving from 1947 to 1953 in the Democratic Party, but more popularly as a liberal. During his time there, he advocated for better working conditions, more public housing, higher wages, lower prices, cheaper rent, and more Social Security for the aged. In foreign policy, he was an early supporter of Cold War policies. He backed the Truman Doctrine and the Marshall Plan, but was critical of the Truman's administration record in Asia. In 1952, Kennedy chose to run for the U.S. Senate, as he was too ambitious to remain long in the House of Representatives. He ran against popular incumbent Henry Lodge, and his sisters and his mother held Kennedy tees across the state in order to help campaign. Kennedy defeated Lodge by 70,000 votes. Less than a year later, on September 12, 1953, Kennedy ended up marrying Jackie Beauvais, who would later go on to be Jackie Kennedy as we know her. And as a senator, Kennedy quickly won a reputation for responsiveness to take requests from constituents, especially on certain occasions when the national interest was at stake. Then in January of 1960, John F. Kennedy formally announced his presidential candidacy. His chief rivals were the senators Hubert Humphrey of Minnesota and Lyndon B. Johnson of Texas. Kennedy knocked Humphrey out of the campaign and dealt with the religious taboo against Roman Catholics, a blow by winning the primary in the Protestant West Virginia. He tackled the Catholic issue again by avowing his belief in the separation of church and state in a televised speech before a group of Protestant ministers in Texas. Nominated on the first ballot, he balanced the Democratic ticket by choosing Johnson as his running mate. In his acceptance speech, John F. Kennedy declared, "We stand today on the edge of a new frontier." Thereas, the phrase, "new frontier," was associated with his presidential programs. When election day finally came, Kennedy won the general election by defeating the Republican candidate, Vice President Richard Milhouse Nixon, by a margin of less than 120,000 votes out of some 70 million votes that were cast. Many observers then and since believed vote fraud contributed to Kennedy's victory, especially in the critical state of Illinois, where Joe Kennedy enlisted the help of Richard Daley, who was the mayor of Chicago. Nixon had defended the Eisenhower record. Kennedy, whose slogan had been, "Let's get this country moving again," had deplored unemployment, the sluggish economy, the so-called missile gap, and the new communist government in Havana. A major factor in the campaign was a unique series of four televised debates between the two men. An estimated 85 to 120 million Americans watched one or more of the debates. Both men showed a firm grasp of the issues, but Kennedy's poise in front of the camera, his Tony Harvard accent, and his good looks convinced many viewers that he had won the debate. He was the youngest man and the first Roman Catholic ever to be elected to the presidency of the United States. His administration in total lasted 1,037 days. From the onset, he was concerned with foreign affairs. In his memorable inaugural address, he called upon Americans to bear the burden of a long twilight struggle against the common enemies of man: tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. In his administration, they had their first brush with foreign affairs, which turned out to be a disaster. In the last year of Eisenhower's presidency, the CIA had equipped and trained a brigade of anti-communism Cuban exiles for an invasion of their homeland. The Joint Chief of Staffs unanimously advised the new president that this force, once ashore, would spark a general uprising against the Cuban leader Fidel Castro. But the Bay of Pigs invasion turned out to be a fiasco. Every man on the beachhead was either killed or captured, and Kennedy assumed sole responsibility for the setback. Privately, he told his father that he would never again accept a Joint Chief's recommendation without first challenging it. This would cause a detrimental effect on the ongoing conflict between the Soviet Union and the United States and Germany, more specifically Berlin. Nikita Khrushchev, who was the Soviet premier, had ordered a wall built between East and West Berlin and threatened to sign a separate peace treaty with East Germany. The president activated National Guard and reserve units, and Khrushchev backed down on his separate peace threat. Kennedy then made a drastic visit to West Berlin, when he told a cheering crowd, "Today, in the world of freedom, the proudest boast is, I am a Berliner." In October of 1962, a buildup of Soviet short and immediate range nuclear missiles was discovered in Cuba. Kennedy demanded that the missiles be dismantled. He ordered a quarantine of Cuba, in effect a blockade that would stop Soviet ships from reaching that island, and for 13 days, nuclear war seemed near. Then, the Soviet premier announced that the offensive weapons would be withdrawn. 10 months later, Kennedy scored his greatest foreign triumph when Nikita Khrushchev and Prime Minister Harold Macmillan of Great Britain joined him in the signing of the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. Yet, Kennedy's commitment to the spread of communism led him to escalate America's involvement in the conflict in Vietnam, where he sent not just supplies and financial assistance as Eisenhower had previously, but he also sent 15,000 military advisors. Because of his slender victory in 1960, Kennedy approached Congress warily, and with good reason. Congress was largely indifferent to his legislative program. It approved his assistance for progress in Latin America and his Peace Corps, which won the enthusiastic endorsement of thousands of college students. But his two most cherished projects, massive income tax cuts and a sweeping civil rights measure, were not passed until after his death. In May of 1961, Kennedy committed the United States to land a man on the moon by the end of the decade. And while he would not live to see this achievement, his advocacy of the space program contributed to the successful launch of the first American manned space shuttle. John F. Kennedy was an immensely popular president, at home and abroad. At times, he seemed to be everywhere at once, encouraging better physical fitness, improving the morale of government workers, bringing brilliant advisors to the White House, and beautifying Washington, D.C. His wife joined him as an advocate for American culture, and their two children, Caroline and JFK Jr., were familiar throughout the country. During his time as president, John F. Kennedy selected his brother Robert as his attorney general. He advised President Kennedy on all matters of foreign and domestic policy, national security, and political affairs. In 1962, Ted Kennedy was elected to the president's former Senate seat in Massachusetts. Their sister Eunice's husband, Sergeant Shiver, became director of the Peace Corps. Their sister Jean's husband, Stephen Smith, was preparing to manage the Democratic Party's 1964 presidential campaign. Another sister, Patricia, had married Peter Lawford, an English-born actor who served the family as an unofficial envoy to the entertainment world. All Americans who knew Rose, Jackie, Bobby, and Teddy were, and most could identify, Bobby's wife as Ethel and Teddy's wife as Joan. But if the first family had become American royalty, its image of perfection would be tainted years later by allegations of marital infidelity by the president. Most notably, John F. Kennedy was noted to have an affair with motion picture icon Marilyn Monroe and of his association with members of organized crime. In 1963, President Kennedy decided to go full speed ahead for his re-election bid in 1964. With Lyndon B. Johnson as his running mate, he realized that he needed Texas in order to secure the vote, as in 1960, the election was only won by a very slim margin. So, he decided to take various parade routes around Texas in order to woo voters and win them over for the upcoming election. One of the cities he decided to visit was Dallas. On November 22 of 1963, John F. Kennedy and his wife Jackie arrived at Love Field in Dallas, Texas. They were scheduled to go through a parade motorcade and then eventually go to a presidential banquet where Kennedy would make a speech. In the presidential motorcade, he was accompanied by Governor Connally and his wife. President Kennedy, his wife Jackie, Governor Connally, and his wife were to ride downtown Dallas in the presidential motorcade in order to see the people and make himself, as he stated, accessible to the people in order to feel like he was a true citizen. This leads us up to the fateful events that took place on November 22 of 1963 and seems like a perfect point to stop this episode. Join us next week as we dive into November 22 of 1963, more specifically the John F. Kennedy assassination, the aftermath, and how everything ended up turning out. Before we go, let's have a brief break to listen to one of our sponsors. And hopefully we'll see you next week for episode 3 of 5 in the JFK assassination series. Thank you for tuning in, and see you next time. Thank you.